Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to One Up, delivered through the AI podcast channel. I'm your usual host, Guy Drinkle, and joining me is Carl. How are you doing, Carl?
Not too bad, Guy. How about yourself?
I am good, apart from sleeping funny, so my neck is being a bit of a bugger, but I won't moan about that. But look at us, Carl. 2 weeks in a row, so something must have happened.
You could say that again.
Just something. But we will get it. I mean, we'll do what we did last week. We'll start reverse. Anything played anything in the last week? There's usually a gap when I ask this question.
Yeah, so obviously last week I talked about a few games, one of which was Shady Part of Me, which I finished off, I think, a day or two after we did the podcast. So that kind of opened up ground for me to start something new. I decided to start a game that I downloaded during a sale a few months ago, American Fugitive. It's kind of like a GTA, like the OG GTA, you know, GTA 1 and 2, GTA London, kind of top-down perspective.
Oh, yes.
It's very much inspired by that. Although, obviously, it's got a new lick of paint. Like, you know, it's got modern visuals and some kind of gameplay mechanics that wouldn't have possibly been well, I suppose actually that some of the mechanics would have worked, I suppose, back on a PS1, but others wouldn't. But it's simplistic. It's not a great game in any sense, but it's a solid game. I'd say like a 7 out of 10. But unfortunately, when I was about 10 hours into the game, I just kind of shortly into the second island. You know, it works that way as the old GTAs, and that you unlock new islands. As I was logging out one night, I got a message that there was an error, and I thought it was just your usual error when you go to close a game, and it's perfectly fine. And the next day when I went to play, it told me that my save was corrupt and couldn't be loaded.
Oh,
so
no.
10 hours down the toilet. So, you know, I think when you were younger and that kind of thing happened, you'd grit your teeth and just start again. But I just couldn't, you know, so I just had to abandon that. So since then, the past couple of nights, I've jumped back into a game I started a few months ago and then kind of forgot about, which is Guacamelee 2. So I've gotten back into that. I'm enjoying that. I love the first Guacamelee. So I'm definitely enjoying this one so far. And I think this time I'll stick with it true to the end. Of course, Drinkbox, the developers, their latest game, Nobody Saves the World, is on Game Pass at the moment.
I was going to mention that because I started playing that yesterday.
Oh, well, that's a perfect lead-in for you, because that's all I've played the past week, so I'll leave it up to you now.
Yeah, I was gonna. To be fair, if save corrupted on any game, I'd uninstall straight away. Couldn't be bothered with that. But no, I started playing that Nobody Saved the World yesterday or 2 days ago. I can't remember. But it's fun. It does bring back the old Castle Crashers vibes from back in the day. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's as good as Castle Crashers, but it is. It is fun. I think I need to play it a bit more to give a full judgment on it. What else have I been on? Did some pro club matches on FIFA, which nobody bothered about, but that's just when there's too many people to play any other game. Overwatch last night ruined my SR on that. is good. What else have I been playing? I literally have my Xbox stuff in front of me. Dun, dun, dun. Well, that's basically it. Tried Apex Legends a bit more recently, but that's a hard game. We're gonna the first news story kind of links into this, but Apex is a very hard game, but it is good. It's hard. I nearly went on Sea of Thieves the other day, Carl. I was tempted.
Almost hooked you back in. The desire to pirate, to rape and pillage.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'm Jack Sparrow. Seeing as he's in there now. But yeah, that's it pretty much. But I mean, before we get into the news, there's been a game not released, I think it comes out tomorrow or Friday. But the reviews have came in. I don't think either of us have played Dying Light, but the second one we were kind of somewhat looking forward to, but it's came out to slightly mixed reviews. But I think I saw someone on WhatsApp or Twitter say the first one came out to mixed reviews and most people loved it, so hopefully that's good news. But Dying Light 2's came out at 3 out of 5, 7 out of 10. They're probably all 8 out of 10. They're the ones I've been seeing mostly. I mean, were you surprised by that? Because it was a game we were kind of both somewhat excited by.
Yeah, I mean, I would have expected better. I think at the time of recording, it's sitting on a 79 average on PC following 23 reviews. So it's not at all that bad score, but when you consider that a lot of publishers tend to, and I know actually in this case Techland are self-publishing, so it won't apply for this game, but we know with a lot of publishers that it's been well publicized in the past that they kind of, as far as the devs go, they operate a 80 or above on Metacritic in order to get a bonus. So if this doesn't get over, if let's pretend they, you know, they weren't self-publishing and they were kind of in the position where they were relying on that bonus for the 80%, this game wouldn't get it, which is strange, because I thought this was the kind of game that I didn't expect this to come out and necessarily be a game of the year contender, you know, with a 90 plus score, but I certainly expected, you know, kind of like around an 83, 84, 85 kind of mark, given the pedigree of the first game. So I'm a little bit surprised, but it's not at all, as I said, a bad score, and I do think that I'll still be itching to give this one a go somewhere down the road.
Also, Pokemon came out, which I forgot about. Have you been tempted?
I actually have. I was listening to a podcast earlier where they were talking about it, and I was thinking, like, I may give Pokemon Legends Arceus a go, because, I mean, I got the last one I picked up was Shield, and I played it for about 10 hours, and then I dropped off, and I enjoyed it, but we talked about it on the podcast at the time. I don't know, it just kind of felt like I'd played it before. Mm. Whereas with Pokemon Legends Arceus, it's different. It's like an action RPG. There's a bit more to the gameplay. It just seems like something fresh. And, you know, I've heard some criticisms on the visuals and that maybe
they, look a
in
bit
the modern
basic,
day, they,
yeah.
they should do more.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's Pokemon, which I love, but it's also something different, I think that just is tempting. And, you know, I hope maybe that by this game doing well, it would encourage Game Freak and Nintendo to take the series in a slightly different direction, as we've been calling on for a long time. So I think I will pick this up quite likely soon, because I mean, there's no reason to wait on a Pokemon game. They never drop in price anyway.
That's true.
So, yeah, and I do have the benefit of a discount from my fiance for 20% off for games. So, why not? You know, if I get it.
A Nintendo game's 50 quid or 60 quid? Or the more?
It depends on where. I'd say you'd be talking anywhere for £45 to £55, depending on the shop.
I was going to say, hopefully they haven't bumped it up to 70 like the rest of them. But rest of February, before we move into the news, we mentioned Dying Light there. If you think of anything before I meet anything that's meaningful to me, Sifu, that PS5 exclusive, not exclusive, it's on PC as well. But Sifu coming out, that looked quite good when we saw that. Crossfire X, I'm looking forward to. The next Amazon games out later in the month.
I think the obvious one next, or this month, obviously, is Elden Ring. I know people are super hyped about that.
Or Horizon Forbidden West missed the PlayStation.
True. But, you know, to put aside my bias, I think Elden Ring is the bigger game in terms of expectation. And I'm sure we'll talk about Horizon in a minute. But I think with Elden Ring, there's a massive expectation there. I mean,
do you think that can meet the expectations? Because, I mean, Cyberpunk was huge. But this seems like, maybe it's the George R. R. Martin stuff or whatever, but it seems to have, I don't know, it seems to have gone to a different level of expectation from what I've seen before.
I think it's a difficult one to call, because on the one hand, in regards to the Soulsborne games, you know, just not thinking about From Software's other games in recent years, for the most part, they've been hits. Obviously, Demon's Souls being the first, maybe didn't attract a large crowd, and I think it was particularly difficult and people weren't used to it. So maybe we can shove that aside somewhat. But I think kind of from Dark Souls on, they've for the most part been hits. Dark Souls 2 tried to do some different things the fans didn't like, and therefore it's seen as the black sheep of the family. But Dark Souls 1, Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne, Sekiro are all massive games with, you know, huge followings. And
Bloodborne, one of the best PlayStation exclusives, isn't it, by all accounts?
Yeah, according to one time guest on this show, Matt, who did the Witcher 3 review with us, he thinks Bloodborne is the best exclusive on PlayStation. In fact, he thinks it's one of the best games on PS4. I actually had a good chat with him about Soulborne's games only last week, because we were talking about the impending release of Elden Ring, which he's really excited about, and he's currently actually playing through the Demon's Souls remake. And obviously that was remade by Bluepoint. It's not made directly by From Software, but it's still very much a Soulsborne game.
Yeah,
and he was full of praise for that as well. And you know, he thinks that Bloodborne is, because I haven't played a Soulsborne since Dark Souls 1, and I didn't finish Dark Souls 1, and I'd love to get back in. And he was kind of telling me that he thinks Bloodborne would be the best point for me to jump back in and give them a go. But I think because, you know, they're very much, I wouldn't say not linear, but let's say more enclosed experiences, with the emphasis being very much on the combat. Whereas Elden Ring is an open world game, so it's going to have both aspects to it. You know, the combat has to be solid and up to the level of Dark Souls, Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne, etc. But they also have to have an open world that's a worthwhile open world. You can't just have a big empty open world. There has to be things in it to discover, things to do. And for that reason, this game isn't only going to be compared to other Soulsborne games. It's going to be compared to Skyrim, to The Witcher 3, to these massive open world RPGs that we know and love. And that's where the difficulty, while I'd be pretty confident it'll meet the expectations in terms of the Soulsborne combat, I do wonder how they're going to do an open world. I mean, I'm not saying they can't do it. They're a fantastic studio. But it's a new direction, and it's going to be interesting to see kind of where people come in on that. I'm really looking forward to the reviews of this one, because I won't be playing it straight off. As I said, I think I need to play some Bloodborne or something before I finally give Elden Ring a go. But I'll be certainly looking at the reviews for this one and seeing what people think.
See, it's different for me, because I've avoided Dark Souls games like the plague, because I anger easily with games. Never mind hard games. But I mean, Jedi Fallen Order was pretty easy compared to Dark Souls games by most accounts, and that pissed me off. So, but I am kind of tempted by it. Maybe it's just because no games have came out in what feels like 20 years because of, well, COVID. But I am kind of tempted by it. But yeah, I'll probably wait for the reviews. I've been burnt by overhyped game. Well, we don't know if it's overhyped, but overhyped pre-release games before. But yeah, we'll see. We'll quickly do Destiny 2. We both played Destiny quite a lot. Can you be arsed? Is it ever tempting to get back into Destiny?
I saw in light of some news that we're going to speak about shortly that someone commented saying that kind of their bridges were burned as far as Destiny 2 goes because, you know, when they removed older content. Mm. And that's exactly what killed it for me. Like, I played Destiny 2 at launch, picked it up day one, played it a lot. We've talked about that in the past, in the first month or so. And then maybe it kind of dialed back somewhat because my friends I played with dropped off. And I think myself and one friend were there kind of when the first DLC dropped, and we played that for a couple of weeks. And then that was us kind of out, because it wasn't a great DLC. Let's be honest, there wasn't much in it to kind of keep you in. When you compare it to the first DLC for Destiny 1, it's night and day. But we always kind of thought of, we remembered fondly our time with both Destiny 1 and 2, and we thought about getting back into Destiny 2. But then suddenly, when you started to hear all these big new things are coming, it's great, and I started to think, I think this could be the time to get back on. And then there was the news, oh, we're removing this content to make room. And then that killed it for me, because in my head it was like, well, then I can never, if I get back in, then there's content I will have never gotten the chance to play, and therefore I'd have missed out. And I just think that would just bug me too much. So I just can't play this game. I was like, I'm all here for whatever Bungie come out with next, be that, you know, we don't think it's going to be Destiny 3, but they have a project in the work that I think is going to be very Destiny-like. And I'm all for that. But I just think I can't get back into Destiny 2, given that there's a part of Destiny 2 I'm never going to get to play. I mean, what's your feeling as far as maybe ever getting back into it?
See, I can't even remember the name. Like, Destiny 1, I can remember most of them. I think they've kind of just all muddled into one now. If I thought about it, I could probably name them. But Destiny 1, it just seemed a lot cleaner, whereas 2, I don't know, the DLCs kind of muddle into one. I played the last one. I couldn't tell you what it was called. I think it's the one that was on Game Pass. I can't remember the name of it. You got a different subclass and stuff like that. It was fine, but it wasn't really anything groundbreaking. I think the problem with Destiny now is, when I played Destiny 1, I had a huge, like like 6 or 7, maybe even 8 group of friends who'd played Destiny at one time. So it was easy to get a raid. Maybe you get the odd 1 or 2 randoms. But playing Destiny 2 now, at most there's 2 or 3 of us now that have the time. So if you're going to do a raid, you've got 3 randoms, and anyone who's ever played Destiny and has to have a random raid squad, it's not fun, because people can be knobheads. So that's kind of where that, and if you're not doing the raid, it's kind of half the point of Destiny, especially the endgame stuff. So yeah, that kind of puts me off, but I'm kind of with you there. I think, and the fact that when you go in, if you've missed a DLC, you have about a whole storyline to do, then you've got a new storyline to do, then you've got another storyline. It's just like, you like need a code-breaking machine to realise what's what, getting the what. It's just, if, and this is me who's played like many hours, many days of Destiny 1 and 2. If you're a new player going into Destiny 2, it will feel like you are doing like Oxford level algebra or whatever, trigonometry or whatever. It's a daunting game to get back into. And that's for me, that's me saying that. And if you're a new, I think it'd be almost impossible to get back into. So yeah, I'm kind of not arsed by it in the slightest. But we will come back to Destiny and Bungie. Other games, Horizon, Forbidden West? Obviously, that's more for you. You finally played. Did you finish it? Or did you...
I did, yeah. No, I platinumed Horizon and then also finished the DLC. So, you know, I'm really hyped for this one. And
day one?
Definitely picking it up. Tempting. It really depends on what I'm playing kind of in the week running up to it and whether I'll say screw it and buy a day one. But I'll definitely be there some point this year, I'd say, for sure. And it's the first game is just, it is quality. It's it's one of the best exclusives of the past generation. And I'm sure that this will be another fantastic. So I know that a few people are a little skeptical because it's a cross-gen game and it was initially being developed for PS4. But I don't think that'll be an issue personally.
It looks like I tried Horizon Zero One, and that's my echo going off. But I'll just leave that in. I tried Horizon. Maybe it's just because I'm an Xbox fanboy or whatever. I never finished it, but you could tell it was a quality game. Once I get a PS5, which is for Spider-Man and God of War, maybe I'll jump back into it at some point and maybe try the sequel. But you could tell it's a quality game. And I watched the... what do they call the PlayStation events?
State of Play?
State of Play, that's the one. The Forbidden West one or that. The underwater scene, it looks beautiful. There'll be no doubt to that game. PlayStation don't make bad games. Like, even the worst one, the zombie one, that's still, like, 7 or 8 out of 10. So, yeah, that'll be a great game. And if you never played the first one, well, get the first one, then try that one, seemingly. Other games. There is a Pokemon knockoff coming to Xbox. I'm in.
What's that called?
Monster Crown.
Huh, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah. Let's have a look.
I'll have to look that up.
Image gallery, it's got... it's basically just Pokemon, but the comment... the little text box says, "You little shit, I'm going to tear your head clean off." So maybe it's more... more grown-up Pokemon.
Sounds fun, actually.
Yeah, I might actually get
definitely
that.
Definitely jump on that one.
I will check that out.
One big release this month, of course, is the is a console rather than a game, which is the Steam Deck.
Oh, yeah.
It's a big one. I mean, we're not particularly a PC gaming podcast here. I mean, I dabble. I'm actually getting new laptop later this month, which has a reasonable graphics card in it. So I should be able to play a bit more in terms of the PC space. I mean, for me personally, I love handheld, which is funny. I there was a period in my, obviously as a kid, I adored handhelds, but there's a period kind of maybe my teens to early 20s where I just found it really hard to play in a handheld. But that's kind of reversed nowadays with the, started kind of towards the tail end of the Switch and the 3DS and the PS Vita. And now, of course, with the Switch, where I'm quite into handhelds again. But despite that, I think the Steam Deck was just something that at the time when I saw it, it was announced, I was like, oh my God, that's a really cool idea. And then I saw the price. And I was like, for the price it is, and the power it is, I just don't think it's a good investment for me personally. But I know that there'll be a lot of PC gamers who are also fans of handhelds that will be all over this.
£570.
That was basically my. You did like a live version of my reaction to the price at the time. You know,
£570. Holy shit. Whoo! That's a no-go. There is another version if you want the cheap version of £460.
That's the cheaper version.
You get one for £350, which will run Football Manager, I think.
I have a Switch that can play Football Manager quite fine.
Yes.
I still have a Vita and a 3DS, which I still have some back catalog games which aren't on other systems that I'm happy to play. I've actually got an Ambernic, which is like a Chinese developed handheld, which can be used for emulation purposes. So it's great for playing kind of older games on. And I do. There is one console that, you know, kind of recently released that I have my eye on, which is the Playdate. You know, that little yellow console, like the Crank.
The kind of
monochrome games. Mm. I really want to get one of those. I missed the first round of pre-orders because their site was shit. If you were based in Europe, you were screwed as far as getting a pre-order. It was broken as hell. They even admitted it was broken as hell. But I will potentially get on the second round for that. So I think between all those different handhelds, I'm okay. I don't need a Steam Deck, cheap version or no. I'll stick with my new laptop when I get it later this month.
I like that all the PR pictures for the Steam Deck have them playing Stardew Valley.
it's like they're trying to tempt me.
Oh dear. Christ, 560 quid. Fucking hell. No thank you. Last one before we get into the news, Lost Ark, Amazon's next adventure. When are they gonna make a console game? And why are they not making console games? That seems weird to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is strange, given the position of Amazon. You know, they're in a position of power where they could enter there was rumors of them entering the console space, and they brought out kind of that streaming box that kind of just came and went away. It was almost like a Stadia Lite. Like, it wasn't boasting to do the same things quite that Google did with Stadia. Maybe because they'd learned some off from the mistakes of Stadia, but it was kind of like, oh, you can get this. It's cheap and you can get smaller games on it, whatever. But outside, not really. They've just sort of stuck to their PC products, and particularly MMOs. I mean, the New World, I haven't tried it myself, but I do have a friend who I play Final Fantasy 14 with, who plays New World, but I haven't really gotten the chance to sit down with him and see kind of where it sits as far as the various MMOs. And of course now Lost Ark, which I think was popular in Asia, and now Amazon have partnered to bring it over to the West. So it's a strange policy to be kind of self-cannibalizing yourself as well, you know, kind of with two MMOs. I mean, we're going to talk about saturation of genres shortly. MMOs, there's always been a lot of MMOs, don't get me wrong, but I think that has increased tenfold in the past 3 or 4 years. But
there's always only been two or three relevant MMOs at a time.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd say there's usually kind of two
World of Warcraft and Final Fantasy.
They're the big boys. Mm. And then there's maybe a handful of kind of respectable, you know, your Guild Wars 2, your
Online.
I suppose, Elder Scrolls Online, that kind of just sit on the next level in the pantheon. And then you have everything else. And it's hard to break, let alone that top layer, it's hard to break into that second layer. And yet Amazon are trying to launch two MMOs in quick succession. It's strange. But it's particularly true because a lot of the new MMOs that are coming over are MMOs that were already out in Asia and are now coming to the West. But I think Asia is better set up to have a saturation of MMOs because it's a different landscape there. I mean, maybe with the exception of Japan, which does have a history with consoles. I mean, it's the home of two of the console manufacturers. And they like their console games, you know, their single player RPGs and action games and whatnot. For the most part, though, the rest of Asia is very much a PC gaming space, and they stick to MMOs, RTSs, and MOBAs. I mean, they're the three big genres there. So you can, in your Korea, your China, etc., you can have a concentration of MMOs. In the West, obviously they're popular. World of Warcraft is massive in the West. Final Fantasy it was big and it is now getting bigger and bigger by the day. That's one thing, but the West, there's a lot more. They're playing a lot more different kind of games. Like sports titles are huge here, and shooters, and
you're competing against COD and FIFA every year.
Exactly.
Not League of Legends.
I don't think the player base is there to support as many MMOs. So I think it's a strange move by Amazon.
It is, and at the same time, I mean, if they developed an MMO for the console market, that's less saturated, because then you're up against Final Fantasy on PlayStation, obviously. Well, then you're up against ESO, maybe Fallout 76, Black Desert. They're the only ones I can think of off the top of my head. Obviously, you're playing up against Destiny, Warframe, other service-type games, but if you came in and took over the console MMO market, that makes more sense to me. But yeah, PC, you're going up against everything and everyone. Whereas you can, at least if you're going for the console market, it has some sort of individuality. So it's just a weird one. Just make a game, like, what was that Crucible game they made? I don't even know. It was like a MOBA-ish. I can't remember exactly. It was only out for like 2 days. But yeah, Amazon's not had a great entry into gaming.
I just went to have a quick look to see if there was any kind of plans as far as porting New World to consoles. And as of September last year, someone tweeted saying, I will when it's on Xbox, presumably in response to some message regarding the game. And the official account for New World replied to them saying New World will be playable only on PC for the foreseeable future. You know, that means there's definitely no plans in the works. So, yeah, it seems like this particular venture will be PC only.
Very strange.
So therefore, you are very much limiting the audience that's available to you. It's a strange one.
It is very strange, but I mean, they have an infinite amount of the old bloke to space. I'm sure they can get into the gaming industry at some point. But yeah, they'll probably figure it out, but it's taken them a long... When did they enter? 2010 was their first game, but that was on the App Store. So when was their first proper game? The Grand Tour game in 20... Okay, maybe they haven't been going that long. that's not counting. But the New World and then a couple cancelled things. Remember when they were making a Lord of the Rings game and everyone was excited? And then they got cancelled. What a day. Right, shall we move on to the news?
Sounds good.
Right, I'll do this one because it's funny. well, that's not funny. It's probably sad for people who work at Ubisoft, but anywho. Hyperscape will shut down on April 28th, Ubisoft announces. This is from Polygon by, wow, what a name, Tucson Egan. Egon? It'll be something not that. I pronounce stuff northernly. Blame me. What a hell of a name, though. Ubisoft has announced that development on Hyperscape will come to an end in a short blog post addressed to the community. The company wrote the development on the free-to-play Battle Royale first-person shooter will cease and the game will be shut down on April 28th. We have made the difficult decision to end development on Hyperscape and shut the game down as of April 28th. The company wrote, "We set out to create a vertical, close quarters and fast-paced shooter experience, and we are extremely grateful to our community for joining us on our journey. We will be taking key learnings from the game into future products. Carl, did we see this coming?
I think we certainly did. I mean, I remember the E3 in which this was revealed. I believe it was E3 at the time. It was one of the shows anyway.
I think so, yeah.
We just completely questioned the existence of this game at the time. And I think the writing was on the wall from day one. So it surprises me that they didn't foresee this. You know, like, why did they push ahead with this project? I mean, I recall when we first kind of started this podcast in the early days, it's kind of an ongoing joke that there was Fortnite news every week. You know, Fortnite was massive at the time, PUBG was quite big, and I think H1Z1, now called Z1 Battle Royale, had its own following. And I actually played, that was the one I played at the time with friends. We dabbled in it. But that seemed like a lot, even then, three notable games. And then suddenly within months, we had Apex Legends, we had Call of Duty Warzone. And then this got announced. And it was like, whatever about Apex Legends coming from Respawn, with their own kind of links to Call of Duty, and Warzone being a Call of Duty title, being able to carve out their own audience, there was no chance that Hyperscape would, you know, as a completely new thing, was going to be able to do so. So I just don't understand what Ubisoft were playing at with this one. Like, it honestly is completely baffling to me why they ever pursued this project.
It is very strange, because, I mean, you mentioned the ones that got into the Battle Royale market. And big franchises like, well, Halo hasn't really attempted it yet, but Battlefield certainly failed in their first foray. Can't say that word. Into the Battle Royale market. So Ubisoft aren't really known for the shooters, are they? Not the first person type game, but if something like Battlefield can't get into it, how is a new thing without a historic franchise attached going to break into it? Like, Apex is almost lucky they just went, this is Titanfall, and most people probably thought Titanfall probably has the best gameplay, i.e. Apex Legends will be fantastic, and it is. Whereas Hyperscape, I think the only thing interesting about it is that Twitch streamers could the world would get evolved by donations or something like that. I think that was the only thing, and that is such a niche thing to sell a game on. It doesn't make sense. So yeah, this was never going to work, regardless of how good it was. It literally would have had to have been the best on the market to work, and everything has different corners cut off. Fortnite has the younger audience, and people can make mansions in seconds. COD is COD. Apex is probably the best quality game overall. It was never going to break into this market, and the only one I can see breaking into this market now is Halo, because it's got the tag of Halo, and it's Microsoft only, and they could, and well, imagine 100 Spartans dropping into somewhere. It sells itself. Hyperscape. What's that? You know what I mean? It was just never going to work, was it?
No, I mean, as you said, it was completely doomed from day one. And, you know, we talked about saturation when talking about MMOs. And I just think for now, this is just sort of a genre that developers should steer clear from. I mean, I don't mean to be completely defeatist, because, you know, if developers say, oh, no, we can't touch that genre because Fortnite's there, then we'd never have any kind of innovation. So I'm not saying they if they have a really good idea that they think is going to catch on, by all means, you know, kind of roll that dice. But for the most part, I don't think developers should see Battle Royale as an easy source of cash, because it isn't. You know, there might have been there was this little moment in time when PUBG and Fortnite blew up that maybe, you know, if you came out there was a lot of interest in those kind of games, people might jump on your game. But now that's came and went. There's too much out there. You need to be original with any kind of Battle Royale project moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You have to adapt Battle Royale, and somewhat my dad is drilling in my house, if you can hear that, but I will soldier on. Yeah, shall we move on to the next news story? Because we do Battle Royale every other show, don't we?
Yeah. Our second story, It Takes Two developer Hazelight Studios teams with DJ2 Entertainment to adapt the game for film and TV. This comes from Joe Otterson over at Variety. And Joe writes, Hazelight Studios has teamed with DJ2 Entertainment to adapt the video game It Takes Two for film and television. Creating the world and story in It Takes Two was so much fun for me and the team, end quote, said Hazelight founder and creative director Joseph Farris. Quote, since it has a strong narrative with many crazy characters and just as crazy co-op action moments, the potential is huge for a great adaptation to film or television, end quote. Quote, DJ2 is honored to partner with Joseph, Oscar, and the incredible team at Hazelight Studios on the linear media adaptation of It Takes Two, end quote, said DJ2's CEO and founder Dimitri M. Johnson. Quote, just like the rest of the gaming world, we fell head over heels in love with Cody, May, Rose, Dr. Hakim, and the imaginative fantasy universe Hazelight have created, and I can't wait to bring these characters and this world to life on the big and small screen. At the time of this publishing, no studio or network is attached to the project, but sources say it is currently the subject of a multi-party bidding war. Pat Casey and Josh Miller, the writers behind Sonic the Hedgehog and its upcoming sequel, are attached to adapt It Takes Two to the screen. Quote, the reception of It Takes Two has been absolutely stellar from press and players alike, end quote, says Willontis, Hazelight studio manager. Quote, we're very excited for the opportunity to expand this beloved IP beyond gaming for both new and returning fans to appreciate, end quote. And you can get Joe's full story over on Variety. So, Guy, we were talking about this game last week. We both have played it. We're both big fans. Do you think it makes sense for a big screen or indeed a small screen adaptation?
I'm not sure how they'll do it. That's my only... Like, the story's amazing. It's just, I think it'll be difficult to pull off in either a TV or movie setting. That's my only doubt. If you could match it, certainly. But it's such a... I don't even know how to word it. It feels like something that's specifically perfected for the gaming medium. More than a film. Obviously, you can adapt it and stuff like that to make it fit TV, but I'm not sure it'll have the same experience as like playing through that, because basically it's a relationship game. It's about reconciling, yada yada. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it is. I'm not sure watching someone do that will have the same energy as playing through that, if that makes sense.
No, I certainly get where you're coming from. I mean, don't get me wrong, there is clever writing in it. It takes to some of the dialogue will make you laugh. And there's also a charm to it and some emotion. Like, it's a well-written game. But I think despite that, I still feel that the writing takes backseat to the gameplay. I mean, gameplay is key. What makes this game great is the gameplay. It's the variety of gameplay, the fact it brings different aspects of different games in under the same game, and somehow it works. And you can't really do that on screen. So with the screen, obviously, there is no gameplay. It's going to be completely centered around the character, the story, the writing, and of course the animation. So, I can't say it won't or can't turn into a good movie or a good, say, Netflix series. There's no guarantees. It's not maybe as obvious one as some other properties might be, but it's no surprise this is happening. You know, we're seeing almost like a renaissance as far as video game adaptations go. I mean, traditionally video game adaptations were crap. You know, video game movies were crap. Video game cartoons were crap. I mean, I watched some of them as a kid and enjoyed them, but they were generally crap. Let's be honest. But nowadays, I think with the movies have gotten better. There was things like Tomb Raider, which was a good movie. Detective Pikachu was brilliant. The
Resident Evil, early ones. I should specify.
The first one was decent, one. Sonic the Hedgehog was a decent movie. So in the last, say, 4 or 5 years, it's taken a turn in movies. And then in terms of series, we had Castlevania, which is amazing. We most recently Arcane, the League of Legends show, which I watched. It's very good. There's a Dota 2 adaptation, which the second series just recently came out with, which I quite enjoyed. The Witcher, yes and no, because obviously initially it was a book. And there's a lot more on the horizon. There's Devil May Cry. There's a Resident Evil series coming to Netflix, I think. There's
we need to talk about the Halo trailer.
Castlevania. There's, I mean, there's a lot, you know, and obviously what's to come, we don't know if it's any good yet, but we can be hopeful based on the animated series that we've had. I think a particular example for comparison to It Takes Two is Cuphead. Cuphead obviously has an animation coming out. It's a similarly kind of beloved game that seemingly came out of nowhere and people adore. So there's certainly a market for this, you know. I think I'd make more sense as a show rather than a movie, though. That's just my personal opinion in that sense. But I think there's room for it, but I'm very intrigued as to how they're going to translate it from a game to a show, because I don't think it'll be maybe as straightforward as some other games have been.
Yeah, I feel like a Way Out would have maybe been a better one, but I suppose, well, if you've not played it, if you do play it, the twist at the end kind of kills the whole game. Ruin the whole series, I suppose. But anywho, we shall move on to the next story. But I would watch an It Takes Two series. That's probably the thing to take away. Well, before we go on that, did you see the Halo trailer?
No, series? Not yet.
Oh, go watch it. after this, go watch the Halo series trailer. It was on the American Football on Monday, I think. Right, new story 3. Shovel Knight developer's next game is a Zelda-like you play as a mouse. I read that earlier, you play with a mouse, so that's more interesting now. This is from Polygon by Anna Diaz. Yacht Club Games, the developer behind Shovel Knight series, announced its next game at the Yacht Club Games Presents stream on Tuesday. The studio's next title will be original adventure inspired by Game Boy Color. It's called Mina the Hollower. The game is still in early development. Yacht Club said the studio is seeking funding through a Kickstarter campaign that's live now. We want your feedback, collaboration, and support in making Mina the Hollower the best game it can possibly be, the developers said. The developers released a trailer alongside its Mina the Hollower reveal. In the game, you play as Mina, a mouse who fights her way through various dungeons using a whip and other items. Like Shovel Knight, Mina features an 8-bit art style. The game's visuals look a lot like a souped-up version of the Game Boy Color game, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening from 1993. The Kickstarter page says that the team plans to create a game that runs in smooth 60 frames per second action combat. I've not played Shovel Knight, but I know it's very highly thought of, so this is just simply good news, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very excited about this. I mean, I played the original Shovel Knight. I haven't played the subsequent kind of expansions, simply because it took me a while to finish Shovel Knight, because I'm not great at 2D platforms anymore. I think it's like that we talked about this on the show before, if I recall it. I feel like there was just a point in my life where I moved from playing 2D games to 3D games, and it's just so hard to go back to 2D games. So for that reason, it took me a good while to beat Shovel Knight, but I did, and I enjoyed it. Like, it's a real charming game. But I love Zelda Link's Awakening. It's my favorite Zelda game. It's one of my favorite Game Boy games. Like, I adore that game. I love those kind of isometric top-down style Zeldas, the old ones. And there's been a lot of games in recent years that have tried to emulate that. Some successfully, some not so much. I mean, we've talked a lot on this show about Tunic, which is out of March, actually, so that's finally coming up. But there's been kind of games like that. That's probably the one that stands out in terms of catching people's eye. But the idea of Yacht Club, you know, being what they are, and the kind of the respect they have for people's nostalgia of old games. I mean, that, you know, if they can do what they did as far as a Mega Man type game goes with Shovel Knight, I can't wait to see what they do with Mina the Hollower, as far as creating a Zelda style game goes. I mean, this is instantly right up there on my kind of anticipation list, particularly as far as independent games go. And I think this one we can confidently say is going to be a hit.
Yeah, certainly on the reputation of Shovel Knight, just anything from these people seems like it'll be a hit. And as you say, if we're comparing it to something like Tunic, I'm in. I've waited too long for that game. Do you want to take us through the next news story? Then I can be annoyed about spending money on a bad game again.
No worries. Our fourth story. EA admits Battlefield 2042 flopped, but would have been less than 10% of annual revenue anyway. This comes from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer, and Tom writes, EA has commented on the failed launch of Battlefield 2042, the latest installment in its flagship shooter franchise, which arrived late and with numerous problems. Speaking to investors last night, EA boss Andrew Wilson admitted that Battlefield 2042's launch, quote, did not meet expectations, end quote. Quote, developing this game with our teams working from home for nearly 2 years ultimately proved to be challenging, end quote, Wilson said by way of explanation. Quote, though our processes for testing and preparation, through our processes for testing and preparation, we believe the experience was ready to be put into our players' hands. We launched with strong stability. However, as more players experienced the full game, it became clear that we had unanticipated performance issues that we would need to address, end quote. Wilson went on to say the game's design had also ultimately been at fault, putting off some of the franchise's core players. Quote, some of the design choices we made with the game also did not resonate with everyone in our community, end quote, Wilson continued. Quote, we are fully committed to realizing the full potential of this game and fully committed to our Battlefield fans. We've already implemented a series of major updates to the game, and there is more to be done, end quote. EA said it expected it would take $100 million hit to revenue as a result of Battlefield 2042's poor performance. Despite all of that, EA still sent a relatively upbeat message to investors by saying that Battlefield 2042 only accounted for a fraction of its annual revenue, and that things were still looking rosy as both FIFA and Apex were doing the numbers. Quote, although this is a $100 million reduction on our position at the end of Q2, it is $225 million above our original guidance for the year, end quote, Chief Financial Officer Blake Jorgensen said. Quote, the reduction is driven by Battlefield 2042 in both Q3 and Q4, but offset by strength in the rest of the business, particularly in FIFA and Apex Legends. Quote, as originally forecast, the Battlefield franchise would have accounted for significantly less than 10% of this year's net bookings and well below 5% of next year's. We're revising those numbers, but you can see it has little impact on financial year 2023 growth. Quote, to summarize, we just delivered the largest quarter in the company's history. FIFA goes from strength to strength. Apex Legends continues to show extraordinary growth. Battlefield disappointed, but our broad portfolio of games and live services insulates us from the impact of any one title, end quote. And you can get the full story over on Eurogamer. I mean, are you surprised at all by this guy? I think just on the eve of us finishing the podcast last week, it was announced that Battlefield 2042 will be going free to play. I mean, are we surprised that Battlefield flopped so hard? Even more so, are we surprised that it hasn't really affected EA's bottom line?
No, because EA makes a lot of money from, well, microtransactions, basically. Ultimate Team, I'm pretty sure I funded half of it. I am addicted to that shit. Yes. Well, let's put it this way. Before it came out, I'd kind of be surprised it flopped. I don't think it looked like the best Battlefield game, but it looked interesting. Obviously, being multiplayer focused, when this is before I played the damn shit thing, and you think, okay, that maybe means it'll be really hyper-focused multiplayer, it'll be something interesting. Then I played it. It was like a PS3 game. But if I say that within the Battlefield portfolio, that's when Battlefield was at its peak with Bad Company, and I think Battlefield 3 was that generation as well. Yeah, it's not a good game. It's an awful game. And I paid £80 for that. So yeah, I fucking hate that game. EA owe me money for that. What was the Iron Man game called?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Iron Man? Oh, Anthem.
Anthem. That's a lot of money they owe me. And there's probably more. Mass Effect Andromeda, although I finished and enjoyed that, so I'll let them off for that one. But they're bastards. They are bastards. But no, I'm not, having played it, I'm not surprised it flopped. Like, even when I'm watching like streamers playing stuff like that, game just died a death quick. Like, and we're talking about when this came out, Verdansk was, the first Warzone map was at its end, I think. I don't think the new one had came out just quite then. So it was at the end of that map cycle, and streamers were looking for another game to play. Like, Halo came out, and obviously Halo's got more limitations because it's not a battle royale or whatever, and it's not like a something you repeat and repeat and repeat. But people were flooding to Halo and stuff like that, whereas Battlefield had a couple days at most. It just didn't survive because it wasn't a good game. It was full of glitches. It just felt like an old game. And there was like an extraction game mode where you almost like a very basic version of like something like Escape from Tarkov or Vigor or something like that, where you do a run, pick up loot, and then try and get out. And it was that was probably the one interesting thing I got from that game, and that was the most basic game mode. But the multiplayer itself, like, I know Battlefield 1 and 5, well, 1 was popular, but 5, so I'd hop on Battlefield 5 happily over that game any day of the week. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. And I'm not the biggest fan of Battlefield, but I've always been able to appreciate, they look amazing, the gameplay is great, the vehicles kind of just put me off. But on this, like, the gameplay was clunky, it was not great, even the vehicles were shit. But, like, and beyond that, like, servers and stuff like that were dreadful. It was just an awful game. It was an awful, awful game. And I don't know what DICE were doing. But, yeah, it almost seemed like a quick cash grab. It seemingly backfired, apart from taking my money, obviously. But, yeah, I tried getting a refund as well, which is annoying. And Microsoft went, well, you've played it. And I was like, but it's shit. but yeah, it was a bad experience.
I mean, I've heard nothing but bad things. I haven't played it. I had no real intentions of playing it. I think when it was initially announced, I was like, "Ooh, cool!" Like Battlefield are going somewhat in the future, because I remember Battlefield 2142 back on the PC in the day. A friend of mine played, and I kind of had a dabbled in it at his house, and it was cool. I mean, I'd been a big fan of the original Battlefield 1942. I used to play bot matches on the PC, so I didn't play online at the time. And then I said that this friend had both Battlefield 2142 and Battlefield 2 on PC, and I quite enjoyed them. And then that caused me to go out and buy the kind of watered down version of Battlefield 2 that was released for PS2 back in the day, and I played that and enjoyed it somewhat. And I think the next time I got into Battlefield then was playing Bad Company 1 on my stepbrother's PS3 while I was waiting for my Xbox to come over from Ireland. So I had a limited pool of games, and I enjoyed Bad Company so much so that I bought Bad Company 2, and I absolutely adored Bad Company 2. And that led on to me playing Battlefield 3, which again I enjoyed. But after that, I kind of had a little time away from the series. I didn't play 4. I didn't play Hardline. Is that what it was called? Yeah, Hardline.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But I came back in for eventually. I was a latecomer to Battlefield 1, but I did come in eventually. And I really loved the vignettes, like the single player vignettes. I thought they were so enjoyable. And that's why I picked up Battlefield 5 for the same thing. And again, I dabbled in the multiplayer a little bit. Had a bit of a laugh, but for the most part I was there for the vignettes. So for them to then say they weren't going to have single player in Battlefield 2042, I was just sort of like, okay, it's not for me anymore, that's fine, I'm out. But then it's kind of laughable that they decide to focus on multiplayer and then fuck up the multiplayer so bad. At least if it had a solid campaign like past Battlefield games, you know, reviewers and stuff would have said, well, at least the single player is good. I know that wouldn't matter to all the people who literally just play these games for multiplayer, but there'd be something for it to cling on to. But it doesn't have that, and therefore it has nothing. So it's crazy to see, like, that, you know, that it's doing this badly.
It's a bad few releases from Dice Mind, isn't it? I mean, what have we had? Battlefield 5, Battlefront 2. Battlefront 1 was obviously, that was a while ago, but that was a big old flop. And this, it just seems to be respawn or bust, doesn't it, really?
The last time they had a truly kind of good game, like a great game, let's say, was probably Battlefield 1. I mean, I'm looking at its Metascore there, has a Metascore of 88. That's probably the last time. Mm-hmm. So you're talking, as you said, that Battlefront 2, Battlefield 5, and Battlefield 2042 before that. And their game before Battlefield 1 was, of course, Star Wars Battlefront 1, which wasn't great either. So it's been a bit of a fall from grace from DICE in recent years. And, you know, I'm sure they'll get another... you know, that they'll get another couple of shots at it, but if things continue to take a nosedive, you know, we've seen with Medal of Honor in the past that EA is not afraid to kind of pull the plug on a shooter series. Now, I know in that case, you know, obviously it was more so because of oversaturation with having two games in the same genre, but, you know, who's to say that Respawn, you know, won't be seen as the new home.
Respawn will get Medal of Honor back.
Yeah, but like something anyway, as their main shooter, and then that could see DICE left in the dirt, and then DICE could just suddenly be just an engine studio, you know, that they're kept around just to make new versions of Frostbite. Like, it's, I'm not saying that will happen, but it could happen. And it's just it's a weird situation when you think just a few years ago it seemed like they were one of those untouchable studios. But I mean, overall, it's funny to think that EA is doing fantastic, apparently financially, in despite a dud like Battlefield 2042, and despite another apparent dud in many ways in the form of the latest Madden. Like, I don't play American football games. I wouldn't know where to begin. But I gather from people who do play them that it's not great. That series for a long time has just been a reskin that they've put...
Well, most people say the same about FIFA, to be fair. So, yeah, if it's the same experience, yeah.
I gather it's even worse with NFL. Like they took referees out of the game a few years ago and claimed it was something to do with it. It was too much resources to have referees in, and they didn't bother putting them back in. I mean, it's mental. Like it just seems completely stripped back. But then they just know people are going to buy it because, you know, it's Madden. There's no real competition for it. There is no competition for it, and it's impossible for it to be any competition.
It'll be interesting with FIFA because they're losing the FIFA. Is it this one or next year? They're losing the FIFA license, aren't they? So they're going to be. I think it's going to be called like EA Sports Football or something for some time. I'll have to Google that after the next story or something like that. But yeah, it's going to be interesting for. For EA Sports, I mean, if FIFA sells their name license or whatever the hell, Take Two have got all the other sports games, so maybe them or something, or 2K, I should say.
I think FIFA is safe simply for the fact that esports football, you know, the football game formerly known as Pro Evolution Soccer, was the worst game last year. I think it ended up with like a Metacritic average of like 24%. So I think there's just no contender there. I know there was that free to play football game that was announced by, I think we might have discussed it on the podcast in the past, but by a Belarusian studio.
Yeah, Ronaldo's endorsed it, hasn't he? Or he's advertised EUFL, I think it was called. I'm sure because I think Ronaldo got. I think he got downgraded on FIFA Ultimate Team or something like that. Because he was part of the advertisement. I can't remember the game. I think UFL, it might not be the one we mentioned, but I think it's one made by streamers or something like that. It's called UFL or something like that.
I'll have a look. UFL is an upcoming free to play.
FIFA will sell EA its naming rights for $1 billion for 4 years. And that was from October last year. EA signaled soon after release of FIFA 22 that the next iteration of the nearly 30-year-old franchise game might not be called FIFA. In a press release, EA explained that it was reviewing our naming rights agreements with FIFA, which opens the possibilities that agreements might not be reached at all. Interesting.
Yeah, no, you were right. It is called UFL.
Is it? Okay.
Looks like it's coming out later this year. Looks like it's partnered with FIFA Pro. The organization for the footballers, which is funny. You often see like certain players coming out and having a go at FIFA, saying that they, you know, haven't given their rights to be included in the game. So it's interesting that they're reaching out to the players. It certainly one to keep an eye on.
We're going to get an oversaturation of football games now, Christ.
Yeah, that could be the next frontier. Although, I wouldn't be surprised after esports football for Konami to just completely pull the plug.
Yeah. We'll remake Pro Evolution Soccer 5, which would be best for all.
I think what would be awesome is if Konami just took one of their old winning 11 games from, like, you know, also known as ISS here in the West back in the 90s, and just kind of up-resed it and put in like modern rosters. That's what I want as a football game. I mean, FIFA has the same side of things covered. We might not love everything about it, but I mean, you're not going to de-shelve it at this point, but I'd love like a more arcadey football game. Like, I think that would be class.
To be fair, I think FIFA and EA tried to dabble into it, but like the 2K story modes where you play as a certain character, I'd like that in football, but done better than what EA did. But yeah, the arcadey ones, like shooting. They've brought back FIFA Street kind of, but if Konami or whatever went proper FIFA Street arcadey stuff, I'd be in on that, I think. But right, let's get into the news, the actual news that people are probably here for because it's the title of the show. I might put a timestamp in there because people might want to skip football chat. I'll do this one because then you can talk about it. Sony buying Bungie for $3.6 billion. This is from GamesIndustry.biz by Brendan Sinclair. Sony Interactive Entertainment today announced a deal to acquire Bungie for $3.6 billion, the latest in a string of big-ticket consolidation deals in the games industry. After the deal closes, Bungie will be an independent subsidiary of Sony, run by a board of directors consisting of current CEO and chairman Pete Parsons and the rest of the studio's current management team. Sony has said Bungie will remain a multi-platform studio with the option to self-publish and reach players wherever they choose to play. At present, the studio is working on maintaining Destiny 2, expanding the Destiny franchise and working on new IP. We've had a strong partnership with Bungie since the inception of the Destiny franchise, and I couldn't be more thrilled to officially welcome the studio into the PlayStation family, said Sony SIE President of CEO and CEO Jim Ryan. This is an important step in our strategy to expand the reach of PlayStation to a much wider audience. We understand how vital Bungie's community is to the studio and look forward to supporting them as they remain independent and continue to grow. Like Bungie, our community is core to PlayStation's DNA, and our shared passion for the gamer and building the best place to play will now evolve even further. Parsons said SIE supported the studio's dual goals of making generation-spanning entertainment while staying creatively independent. Both Bungie and SIE believe the game worlds are only the beginning of what our IP will become. Parsons said, "Our original universe has immense potential, and with SIE support, we will propel Bungie into becoming a global multimedia entertainment company dedicated to delivering on our creative vision." Mr. PlayStation, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe not as straightforward as some of the other acquisitions, simply because there's a lot of emphasis on a maintained independence. I mean, it looks like they're going to be right out an independent subsidiary. You know, there's mention of them still self-publishing on other platforms, so I think you can bank that any future Bungie titles are going to come to PC straight off. You can bank that, and I think it's clear that Destiny 2 is, as they've said, announced, is going to remain on Xbox. And I think their next big project, which is codenamed, trying to remember here.
Matter, isn't it?
Matter, yeah, that's the one. Nice assist there. Matter, I would have a gut feeling. I would say that will be on Xbox as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then kind of where do we go from there? You know, that's the big question. You know, will all future Bungie titles be across the three kind of main platforms for triple A experiences? Or after that point, will it just be PlayStation and PC? Or could it be more selective? Because, you know, Bungie scaled up a lot. You know, prior to this takeover in recent months, there had been investment from China. They used that to open up new studios and hire. And it seemed definitely like they were working on multiple projects. So my best prediction on how this will pan out is I think that there will be Bungie games that are on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. And I do think Matter, being their next big product, will be one of those. But I think there will be some Bungie products that are PC and PlayStation exclusive.
Mm.
I could be wrong on that. Maybe Bungie have complete say, and because, you know, we're just putting everything still on Xbox. But I do think, I don't think, you know, that like if Xbox made this acquisition and said, oh, we're going to keep everything multi-plat, that it makes sense to me, because that's their long-term goal, you know, is Game Pass. It's not Xbox, it's Game Pass. It's, you know, that they're the father of the PC anyway, so they're happy to be out there. Sony aren't Xbox, you know, the PlayStation at the end of the day is still their bread and butter. They are starting to bring their games to PC, but PlayStation is still the main thing for them. So I just don't see how they drop this much money if it wasn't going to involve, you know, some level of exclusivity. So I do think there will be select projects that aren't on an Xbox platform. And, you know, it could completely come back to bite me in the ass. I could be wrong. I was wrong when I, you know, as I said last week, I was wrong when I said that the likes of the Elder Scrolls and Wolfenstein and things like that would, well, less so Wolfenstein, but mainly the Elder Scrolls and Fallout would be on PlayStation. Doesn't seem that's going to be the case. So I was wrong on that. Time will tell, I suppose, but my personal gut feeling is that there will be some Bungie games that are more on all platforms, some Bungie games that are just PlayStation and PC. I mean, what's your thought?
Yeah, it's a strange one, because I think with Bungie, they've only, well, before not counting Halo, they've only made two games. So this is something brand new for them. Obviously, they've... What were they independent for, like 6 months, a year? Or is time just different in COVID times?
Are we talking two games since they stopped making Halo?
Yeah. Is it yeah. two? Yeah. Is
yeah,
it Destiny just, 1 or 2? Yeah.
Destiny 1 or 2, yeah.
Yeah. So it is strange. It's the fact that... because last year, I think they did like a... was it roadmap, that's the word, for Destiny 2, and that spanned for years. I know Bungie's massive and they hire hundreds of people, but Matt has been named for a few years now, and we've not heard any news whatsoever about that. Is that the one that's China-funded? Is it NetGo? What's the company called? Whatever it's called. I think that's funded by that one. I think the other rumour is they were going to make a shooter. I think I heard that like a few years ago, on like a, not a few years, like maybe last year on a podcast Unlocked or something. Like that. I'm sure I heard them. Might have just been speculation or something. But there's only two games that are kind of linked into being development other than Destiny 2. So I don't think it's a comparable position, certainly not to Activision, because that is a whole publishing branch of the industry. Well, let's say Bethesda. Or even some of the smaller ones. It's... I don't know, because Destiny... I keep going there. Bungie don't make loads of games. Whereas Bethesda do. It's just strange to me. I'm just not sure. But I think, again, I was listening to Unlock this afternoon on the subject. Bungie seem to have bigger plans to expand Destiny into other forms of media, into TV shows, etc. So maybe they're just worried about if they put that on one platform, it might limit that. But Destiny certainly will be on all consoles, all platforms, etc. But I don't know, is Matter going to be linked to Destiny in some way? Is the other unannounced game going to be linked to Destiny? Is it all going to be in some sort of Bungie world? Who knows? It's a strange one, but I think as an acquisition, I think it's really smart from Sony. Even if it is multi-platform, you've got our next news story is kind of linked to it. But you've got the kings of games with a service and world building and stuff like that. And albeit Destiny, we mentioned our frustrations with Destiny earlier, it is some of the best gameplay and one of my favorite games of last gen. Destiny 1 probably more so than Destiny 2. They are a fantastic studio, and they obviously self-publish now, or did. It's a fantastic acquisition, seems quite a lot of money for me, but unless I'm just not thinking big enough here. But yeah, Bungie's excellent. They've made many, many of my favourite games in well, history. And they bought Halo's dad because we bought Crash Bandicoot and Spyro.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, they talk about a lot about the older media.
Mm.
You know, I'm expecting us to see some sort of Destiny movie or show or something in the near future, or maybe both, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's as much for that kind of thing that's, because let's not forget Sony also own a movie studio. It's not just PlayStation. So there's a lot there. I think as far as Matter goes, you know, we don't know what it is at the end of the day, but your gut feeling would say it'll be some form of shooter and it'll involve space. Because,
yeah,
you know, you look at Bungie, let's even go pre-Halo. The two series they were most known for back in the day were Marathon and Myth. Myth was a space-based FPS, and it sort of shares a lot of DNA with Halo. I think there was like Spartan armor and stuff in Myth as well, and they seem to take a lot of the ideas from Myth and bring it to Halo. And Destiny obviously shares some DNA with Halo, and I feel that mm-hmm. that DNA will then be further carried on to Matter. And I think with Destiny being a live service game, again, I'd assume Destiny or Matter will be a live service game. And we talked last week how it didn't make much sense for Microsoft to make Call of Duty exclusive, seen as the way in which it makes its money. The same way it didn't make sense for them to make Minecraft exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way I seriously doubt that they'll make Overwatch 2 exclusive when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the exact same thing applies here for Destiny and will apply for Matter, will apply for any other game Bungie develops that's in that similar wheelhouse. However, Bungie, you know, they're in the process of setting up a studio in Amsterdam, and they're kind of investing in teams elsewhere. They're expanding. So I think Bungie are likely going to be in a position where they can support Destiny, develop Matter, and develop other projects, or at least another project.
Mm-hmm.
And Bungie prior, as I said, to their time with Xbox, they made Myth, which was an RTS, a fantasy RTS series, kind of comparable, I suppose, to Warcraft. They also had some other games. I remember things like Oni and stuff on PlayStation 2 back in the day. Not the biggest game, let's be fair, but it was something they did. I think that was actually their kind of bridge game between Myth and moving on to Halo. And I think the reason that really, it's funny, but I was only listening to a podcast coincidentally recently that was talking about kind of big game glitches. And it talked about with Myth, how one of the myths, I think it was Myth 2, there was like a glitch where if you deleted Myth 2 off your computer, it would brick your computer because of the way in which the game installed. And that was a massive hit to Bungie financially, and that's why they ultimately ended up going with Microsoft and getting taken over there. But they do have it in them to make other games, and I'm sure they would like to make something that isn't just simply a space shooter, as much as they enjoy making those games. So if they do, if I'm right in that, and they do pursue another project, it would be that kind of third project, that third kind of wheel of Bungie that I think would be what they would set as kind of your PlayStation exclusive. And I think that has to be playing a part in this takeover. There's also the support. We know some other Sony studios and Sony affiliated studios are said to be working on shooters. And it's great to have Bungie in-house where they can kind of lend, have them, they might co-develop some projects with other studios. That's another possibility. That there's a lot that this takeover can do for PlayStation moving forward. So even if it's not, you know, just to have exclusives or just purely exclusive games coming, you know, there is a lot of benefit, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how this one pans out. And one aspect of the news that I want to talk about was, after this was announced, Jason Schreier, you know, the champion of the people when it comes to game developers, tweeted out, and you know, Jason's a fantastic games journalist, but I think he often has a, you know, kind of an underlying message to his stories. You know, he likes to talk about crunch and stuff, and sometimes that's important to highlight. Other times it feels like he's, you know, kind of clutching at straws when there's not really a problem there to talk about. And in this tweet, he said that when Bungie got away from Microsoft, they celebrated in a meeting. When they got out of their contract with Activision again, they popped champagne in a meeting. And then now, following their acquisition of Sony, the staff were told over a Zoom meeting. And the implication there was, oh, that's kind of a, you know, bad treatment. I mean, for me, I think the situation is different. I mean, what's your take on that?
It is strange. I think seemingly them keeping their independence, it's probably the key thing there. Well, independence in quotation marks for the time being. It's probably what the key is, because getting out from Microsoft, obviously Microsoft at that stage wasn't really taking gaming seriously, and they just wanted Bungie to keep pumping out Halo by the looks of it. Good choice there, Microsoft, thank you. And then Activision, well, we spent last week discussing what a mess that is, and probably not the best working conditions, and getting out from them. Well, I think Blizzard would love to do that, would have loved to have done that, and so on. So yeah, that's probably one thing for popping champagne and stuff like that. And then this independent bit, I think they've only done a couple DLCs of self-publishing. So not really anything to judge there, but they've been craving independence for what, 15 years now? A bit longer? No, probably, well, I think it was 2009, I think they left Xbox, Microsoft. So yeah, a decent amount of years. So they've been craving independence, and if they can get funded by Sony and then get the multimedia film backing by Sony, it's a good deal for them. And then on Sony's part, if they get basically the help they need in making certain things, cross-platform, shooters, whatever, first-person shooting, mechanics and different tech at Bungie. It works for them both, I think. But Bungie have been craving that independence for a while now, so it'll be interesting to see how long the deal lasts. But I think if Sony came out day one of the deal and said everything will be multi-plat, they're still Bungie, basically. It seems like it'll be happy days for them, but I'm pretty sure we've said that before.
Yeah, I mean, for me, when they were at Microsoft, they were just the Halo studio. That's all Microsoft wanted them to be, and that's not what they wanted to be. I mean, that's what 343 is now. It's just the Halo studio. You know, they've got their Halo studio, they've their Gears studio. That's what Microsoft likes as far as their shooters. Bungie didn't want to be that, and then they went to they partnered with Activision for Destiny, and Activision just wanted to steer Destiny one way, Bungie wanted to steer it another way. I don't think, you know, at PlayStation it looks like they're going to be allowed to develop whatever their products they want. Okay, I'm not being naive here. I know, obviously, at the end of the day, when you belong to a company, you are going to answer to them at some stages. And we know Sony aren't perfect. They don't let their studios off to do what they want. You know, we've talked about in the past, obviously, their treatment of Bend. You know, they kind of messed them around in recent months, you know, putting them on allowing them to make a sequel to Days Gone, wasn't it? Yeah. Then kind of putting them on a sequel to Uncharted, and then taking them off it because they didn't want to do it, and then finally green lighting a new project. They're not perfect, but for the most part, they do support their teams. They kind of allow them some creative freedom. I think Bungie will be able to do a lot more than they will have, you know, under Microsoft, at least under the Microsoft of old. And then obviously, than they did in their partnership with Activision. I think Sony has a lot of trust in Bungie and they know what they're doing. And I think they're going to be able to continue to do that. I mean, that said, shoving aside this individual case, as I said last week and as you echoed, we don't like this consolidation. We don't want everyone being bought up. And sadly, we know it's going to continue. You know, we know Microsoft aren't done. It might be difficult for them to buy another mega publisher, kind of with competition in mind. You know, it's kind of looking like a monopoly. But I think they're going to still buy studios. There's consistent rumors that they're going to buy Avalanche.
And IO. You know,
and IO. And I think that'll happen with both of those. I'm pretty confident they'll happen. I don't want it to happen. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it will. I still wouldn't rule out them. Well, maybe an EA or a Take-Two or Ubisoft might be off the table because of, you know, kind of just scaling up too much and then being seen as a monopoly. Nonetheless, a smaller publisher isn't off the table, particularly a Japanese publisher. So I can't rule out a Sega. So I don't think Microsoft are done. And I think Sony will continue to make acquisitions. You know, as we talked about, there's a cup, I think From Software is something that some industry analysts think, you know, could potentially be there. You know, Level 5 is one I've brought up a few times on the back. I think I mentioned again last week that a Japanese developer that Sony, although indeed Nintendo as well, have a good relationship with. And as a lot of people have said, Sony's path to acquisitions is usually second party relationship. Maybe get out a game or two if it goes well. Acquire them. That's what has happened with a lot of the studios that are currently in their stable, and that's what people expect to see. So, you know, the studio, the ex-Treyarch guys, they are called Deviation Games, that are working on a new shooter, apparently. A lot of people think if that shooter comes out and does well, few months later, they'll suddenly be a PlayStation studio. Makes sense to me. Of course, there's also Jade Raymond's founded studio, Haven Studios, up in Canada, who are working on a second party title for Sony. Again, if that does well, they might be acquired. I suppose you could say that's a little, I mean, it is consolidation, don't get me wrong. It's a little bit different because obviously Sony is investing in these studios and helping cultivate them and then bringing them in-house. It's not quite the same as going out and buying a studio that's been around for 30 years. But it's still a form of consolidation. It's still contributing, and it's not welcome, but it's going to continue. And on a podcast I was listening to today, people were talking about, oh, with Sony and Microsoft buying people, who could Nintendo buy? And, you know, Nintendo obviously are smaller than both of them, but they could buy some studios. They could even buy maybe a Capcom. It'd be a massive deal for them, but I think it would be attainable. They'd get the investment to make it happen, but that's just how things are going to continue to work. And you know, we're not even getting into Tencent there. We know they're going to continue to buy up things. So I don't like consolidation, but unfortunately, I think it's just one of those parts of the gaming industry we're just going to have to accept. Like, we've had to accept other things we don't like microtransactions, for example.
What's the breaking point on this? Because it can't just all, like, I know Microsoft have the funds to do it, and so Sony do as well. But when's the breaking point? Like, and this is what I'm mentioning, Amazon, Apple, Google, whoever else. Whenever they get in, I mean, it's going to be even more absolutely fucked. But surely there has to be a breaking point where they think we can make more money working together than just trying to attract each other to our ecosystem for Xbox, console, for Sony. Like, I'm not saying put all the, because that's just living in fantasy land. But surely there has to be some sort of deal eventually where, I don't know, you mentioned earlier, COD titles go on PlayStation and Xbox gets Bungie title. Surely there'll have to be some sort of working together at some point. I'm not saying you can have Halo, we can have Last of Us, etc., the old ones and stuff like that, but long set tight third-party titles, that has to be up for debate still. This is just stupid. Like, you're gonna, two companies could potentially monopolize the industry, or three if you put Tencent in there.
I mean, I think there comes a point down the future where, you know, it doesn't really matter anymore. In that, consolidation from a business point will matter. And, you know, I'll talk about that separately in a minute. But in terms of the just focusing on the PlayStation and Xbox angle of it, because I think there comes a point either where, or potentially both, where, you know, Spartacus, Sony's upcoming service, or service reboot rather, because obviously they already have a service in place, and Game Pass are on the opposite platforms. You know, like Game Pass is on PlayStation, Spartacus is on Xbox, or at least some maybe watered down version. Or alternatively, or potentially on top of, where kind of, you know, consoles aren't even relevant anymore, and it's just like on your smart TV or your PC, you log on to the PlayStation kind of Spartacus service and or the Game Pass service, and you have your games there. I mean, it's already happening with Game Pass, and then it's not really relevant because you can just get your. I mean, I suppose you have to pay for the services, but we already do that with streaming services, so I think we're acclimated to it. So down the road, it in terms of the exclusives and that, it's probably not going to matter. But, you know, that could be 5 to 10 years away. It's difficult to say. I mean, from a business point of view, though, I mean, there is a limit for these individual bodies. You know, as we said, it's difficult to see Microsoft buying in an EA or a Take-Two or Ubisoft even maybe at this point, because, you know, at one point the government, you know, be that either in the US or the EU, is going to say, here now, lads, that's a monopoly. No, we're saying no, that's not allowed to happen. And therefore, I think maybe Microsoft will slow down. Although I heard on another podcast that I listened to that apparently insiders say that this, you know, what Microsoft has spent so far on acquisitions is only about half of the budget they have for gaming related acquisitions. So I don't know, but I think personally I'd be surprised if we see another massive one. But as I've said before, you know, moments ago, that doesn't rule out them buying another handful of developers like they have in the past. That doesn't rule out even buying maybe a smaller publisher. So they will do more. Sony will do more. Tencent will do more. Embracer, of course, will do more on a smaller scale. And EA and Take-Two, to a lesser sense as well, will be making their acquisitions. But so there does come a point where each body is eventually going to be told to keep at it. No, you've kind of gotten too big, type thing. You brought too much under your banner. This is a monopoly. No, but because there's so many of them to do it, I feel we have to accept a situation whereby, you know, 5 to 10 years from here, we're going to have a point where 90% of the industry is concentrated in the hands of maybe six or seven bodies. That's just the way it's going to be, unfortunately, unless something drastic changes. You know, you're still always going to have some holdouts and your indies, you know, people who want to go it alone. But I do think...
Basically just Devolver versus Xbox and Sony.
But I think for the most part, we are going to see a large concentration of studios in the hands of the few.
That's kind of sad, isn't it? It's a bit... It's not great.
It is. You know, I like the diversity of publishers and studios, but it's just a trend that's just sparked. And I think a lot of people have pointed the finger at Microsoft, but, you know, I think before Microsoft were doing this, I think Tencent and to a lesser extent, you know, less importantly, because the studios they were acquiring weren't seen as important, but the Embracer Group, like they're the two who kind of, I mean, acquisitions have always been there. We know that, but in terms of doing it on a regular basis, they have been the two that have kind of gotten in there and started this massive consolidation.
I think, I can't remember his name, the IGN guy, who was the Xbox one? Come on, bloody damn. I think he worked out it was like $85 billion has been spent in 2022 on acquisitions already. Obviously, most of that's Activision Blizzard, but so I got Activision Blizzard this and then...
Zynga,
that's the one. It's just gone February, lads.
and Embracer still haven't announced any acquisitions. And, you know,
they normally do one a week.
Yeah, it seemed like we were reporting on one every other day on the podcast in previous years. So I think there's more to come this year for sure. You know, and maybe nothing on the level of Activision, most likely nothing on the level of acquisition.
Well, but in well, maybe linked news, but not directly linked. But the Suicide Squad game got delayed, and obviously I'm not saying this is linked, I'm just bringing it up, just to bring up the sad news of that game got delayed to 2023. So news broke before we finished the podcast, Carl, so that's a bloody first. WB is still there. That seems obtainable without monopolizing or being a monopoly. That seems like the one Microsoft will especially go for, but PlayStation has long links with NetherRealm, don't they? I know it's not all of WB. That seems like the next biggish one on the market for me.
I mean, they were actively shopping themselves. Yeah, we talked exactly about it on the podcast, but they then seemed to backtrack and change their plans.
But they are having issues with Suicide Squad and the Harry Potter game as well. So
it's, yeah, I mean, as we discussed at the time, I think WB Games is a difficult one because, you know, obviously a lot of their properties are linked to Warner Bros. Yeah. And those properties aren't necessarily going to go with the studios. And then you're really just buying Mortal Kombat and some studios, and albeit some talented studios like NetherRealm and Monolith and Rocksteady, but nonetheless studios without properties. So it's a tricky one that, and again it's more so like you're pulling a part of a company out of a company, rather than outright acquiring them. It's interesting. It is one of the ones that has the potential to be there. I think the next acquisition we see from Microsoft, as I said, that will be a studio. I think IO or Avalanche would be the frontrunners. A lot of people question the Avalanche link because, you know, they're not exactly this stellar studio that are knocking out hits left, right, and center. They have some good games, some very good games, some not so good games. They're kind of a mixed bag. It does seem to be one there, and that would be my expectation. Sony's, I think they're definitely looking at acquiring more, but I you know, I wouldn't have called the Bungie one, so I wouldn't dare try to call their next one here. But I do
Square
think
Square would be it, wouldn't it? I mean, they've got all their games are basically PlayStation exclusives anyway, or timed exclusives.
Yeah, I mean there is a potential there. It's one that would make sense. I was joking in a WhatsApp group we put in this morning about a potential Microsoft acquisition of Sega and saying that they'll have Persona over my dead body. And as I said, while I'm not a fan of consolidation, if Sony has to buy Square Enix and Sega to keep Persona and Final Fantasy on PlayStation platforms, then I'll begrudgingly accept that over a Microsoft acquisition. But, you know, it's Square is Square, you'd be talking double or more the price of what they've paid for Bungie now. So it's a big one. They are capable of it, but it's a big move. It would be...
What, about 8 billion, you reckon?
Somewhere between 8 and 10 billion,
Bethesda,
I'd say.
A bit more than Bethesda.
Yeah, I think they'd be worth more than Bethesda. I could be wrong on that, but I would think so. So I think if they make a major acquisition of Sony, it is most likely to be Square Enix. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure I see it imminently. But I certainly could see them picking up some smaller studios. Particularly, I'm expecting a couple of Japanese acquisitions for Sony because I think they got rid of Studio Japan, just kind of kept Asobo, the people behind Rescue Bot, or Astrobot rather. So that I feel like they've kind of taken one step back to take kind of two steps forward in terms of their Japanese presence. So I do expect some Japanese acquisitions at some point. And yeah, no, I think these won't be the last acquisitions this year. And I'm not just talking about Embracer going out and making their usual acquisitions. I think we'll see some more eyebrow raisers, even if none quite meet the level of
Activision. Yeah. Just keep it under 10 bill, lads. It's keep it cheap, you know. Why not? What a strange time. Was that? No, we have service games to talk about. Or did we kind of mention that in? No, do you want to bring that up?
Our last story, and I think we've kind of already delved into it somewhat. PlayStation plans to launch more than 10 live service games before March 2026. And this comes from Tom Phillips over at Eurogamer. Tom writes, Sony will launch more than 10 new live service games over the next 4 years, it is said, just days after announcing its $3.6 billion Bungie buyout bid. Speaking as part of an investor presentation transcribed by Eurogamer, Sony exec Hiroki Totoki said Bungie would aid PlayStation in this major expansion of live service game development. Quote, the strategic significance of this acquisition lies not only in obtaining the highly successful Destiny franchise, as well as major new IP Bungie is currently developing, but also incorporating into the Sony group the expertise and technologies Bungie has developed in the live game services space, end quote, Totoki said. Quote, we intend to utilize these strengths when developing game IP at PlayStation Studios as we expand into the live game services area, end quote. Quote, through close collaboration between Bungie and PlayStation Studios, we aim to launch more than 10 live service games by the fiscal year ending March 2026, end quote. It's a bold statement from a first party most often praised for its blockbuster single-player franchises, Uncharted, The Last of Us, God of War, and Horizon. So what are those 10? Well, we have a good guess. First off, there's Bungie's new franchise, codename Matter. We know this won't be PlayStation exclusive, but will it turn up on Xbox as well, or just PC? The Last of Us developer Naughty Dog has been building its new version of the series multiplayer for years now, after separating it out from The Last of Us Part 2. That seems another likely bet. Next, there's the Twisted Metal project reportedly in the works at UK developer Firesprite. Surely this will not be a one-and-done release and will have some kind of live service and or battle pass. Horizon Zero Dawn developer Guerrilla has hired for roles relating to online game development, suggesting some kind of multiplayer spin-off of that popular franchise is on the cards. Then there's Deviation Games, the 100-person team set up by former Call of Duty Black Ops developers. The studio is currently in development on a new IP for PlayStation. Most recently, we heard Sony's London studio is also making an online game. And then perhaps there's whatever the Jade Raymond founded Haven Studios is up to. And you can read the story over on Eurogamer, of course. I mean, is this a surprise, Guy, considering that Microsoft were already kind of known as the multiplayer guys with Gears and Halo? And, you know, now they've brought Activision in and suddenly have a lot more multiplayer games. People have been saying for a while Sony need to get back in that space. There has been this long rumored project at Guerrilla. People didn't know whether it was a multiplayer Horizon or a new Killzone, or even there was talk of even a new SOCOM game. A long time since we had one of those. You know, is it time that PlayStation effectively stopped surrendering this genre to Microsoft and try and fight back on that front somewhat?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's not a criticism, but I think we have pointed out in the past that regardless of how good Sony games are, they are kind of samey. They're all third-person adventure, etc. They're all mostly excellent, 9/10 out of 10. But they can be samey, let's be fair. If you add in this, some of them will be third-person, like Last of Us. Is it Factions it's called, or will be called?
The multiplayer mode in the first Last of Us was called Factions.
So they're just calling it
so
that.
They presume it's going to be called Factions, yeah.
So that'll be third-person. Guerrilla, if it is Horizon, that'll be third-person, but it'll be different. But if it's not, it'll be...
Wouldn't a first-person Horizon multiplayer game be pretty cool? Like going around with a bow and arrow?
Sounds like Ark.
Yeah, I suppose, in a sense. But
I'd play that.
It'd be a cool idea.
That would be kind of cool. Need to do what GTA did and make you be able to switch. And Deviation, if they're just making COD with a different whatever, that'll be first person. So adding in these, and then obviously more to the point, multiplayer, it's certainly what's been lacking. I'm trying to think, what would be, would Killzone actually be the last proper multiplayer based game? I know I had a story.
Yeah, I think it would be, yeah.
Dave, you mean, that's been a long while ago. Was that was the launch of PS4, wasn't it?
Yeah. The last Killzone game came out then, and then since then they've somewhat abandoned the series.
It's not great. It's not great, but no, I think this is them just trying to take back control, but also adding a bit of difference to the portfolio. But it will be interesting. The amount of live action games. If they are good, they are just constantly money makers as well. I mean, Sony, I'm not, obviously, they are, were they second in the money, were they first or second, were they behind Tencent in the money making that we talked about last week?
I think so. I can't recall off the top of my head.
Were one or two. So they obviously make a lot of money regardless. But if you've got games that are there with battle passes and constant updatings of content and stuff like that, they will just add more money in. So this is just clever by Sony. It gives them different stuff for the gaming portfolio. And if they are successful, it will be just cash. It'll just be cash streams after cash streams. It's clever by them. But yeah, I think I probably wouldn't play, but I'd be interested to see what Horizon Zero Dawn multiplayer would be like. But I think it'd probably make more sense if it was a Killzone or was SOCOM like CSGO, or am I misremembering?
Yeah, to a degree, I suppose it would be a comparison would be to Counter-Strike or to the early Ghost Recon games, not these new Ghost Recon games. The first couple of Ghost Recons before they tried to experiment.
Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be one of them, one of the first person titles, because then you can obviously they can still work on other stuff at the same time. But yeah, I mean, what was that one? What was the fire spray? Twisted Metal, I think. Would that? I know people love the Twisted Metal one, but would that last long enough? I'm not sure.
There was actually an indication on, you know, David Jaffe, who's actually the father of Twisted Metal and nowadays does a podcast. He seemed to hint, and people didn't know whether he was just trying to fuck about, basically, but he seemed to suggest that this Twisted Metal project isn't what people think it is, and he even kind of hinted that rather than a Twisted Metal game, it could be a reboot of the MotorStorm series, which of course was a PlayStation series that kind of started, I think, on the PS3. In the PS3 era, there might have been one MotorStorm game in the PS4 era as well. I do actually. I never played a MotorStorm game at length, but I do remember my first ever experience playing a PS3 was in one of those kind of test kiosks in a store playing the first MotorStorm. So it was an impressive kind of racer, kind of a high action racer, and I don't know whether that indication of David Jaffe is simply based on the fact that apparently Firesprite hired the guy who used to be behind MotorStorm, so that could just be putting one and one together and getting three or whatever, maybe. But you know, if anyone's going to have a bit of an insight on this, it probably is David Jaffe. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how that piece of news plays out.
Interesting. But, well, maybe they just want their own version of Forza Horizon or something like that. Could be interesting. Suppose that is kind of like a game with a service, because that... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there is room for another racing series from Sony that's not just Gran Turismo. You know, if Microsoft can support Forza and Forza Horizon, I think PlayStation can support you as well. They tried, obviously, in the past with Drive Club, and that was a spectacular failure. But that doesn't mean that every racer they tried to release will fail.
Yeah, and I think if you make it something different, like Gran Turismo, I presume, as I have not played that since like the PS1, PS2 days, I'm guessing that's still track-based racing. I know you're not the biggest racing fan as well, so you probably won't know, but if that's your track day one, so your Forza Motorsport, and then whatever this game, if that's more Horizon, where it's a bit more free roam and stuff like that, or not, it doesn't have to be exactly like that, but it could be dirt racing or whatever. It seems like there's space there, but it'll be interesting. But no, it looks like it's an interesting time for Sony. Seeing as it's your preferred console, finishing words?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting acquisition, because I don't think it's your usual straightforward this we're bringing these in house and these games are now PlayStation exclusive and might come to PC 3-4 years down the road. You know, Bungie are definitely going to do their own thing to a degree, that much is clear, and you know what that level of independence is going to be interesting to watch. As I said, my expectation is that there will be some level of exclusivity with some Bungie projects, but it will be interesting to see what those projects are and if indeed there is a level of exclusivity. And as we said, it's more acquisitions are going to come for all, you know, both Microsoft and Sony, among other companies. And you know, if we log off this podcast and in an hour you're texting me on WhatsApp saying Microsoft have just announced that they're buying X Studio, it wouldn't surprise me one bit at this point. I think I'm just about numb to these acquisitions now.
Yeah. So what time is it now? It's 6:15 now. So let's give it till 8. Let's round it up. If 8, let's say, who do you want to put money on? 10 cents.
Buying someone. Yeah. Well, see, they're more so kind of buy 20% of someone here and 20% there and
embrace a group then.
I'm shocked they haven't. We're in the second month of the year and they still haven't made any acquisitions here. So, you know, I'm thinking an Embracer acquisition is well overdue.
Absolutely. So if we could think of it as smallish, I'm trying to think, who could go to Embracer Group?
Lately they've been buying European studios that I haven't heard of. And then you might click in and be like, oh, they made that game. You know, so it's difficult to kind of make a call on who they'd buy, but I'll go out on a wild one. Although maybe Nintendo would rival them if they did, but then again, it's been a while since Nintendo made an acquisition. I'll say Mercury Steam. Let's just go out on a limb and say Embracer Group will acquire Mercury Steam.
I will go big. EA buying WB Games. you got till 8 o'clock, EA. Impress me. Right, we'll finish up there. We will break the two-hour window, but hey-ho, look at us. 2 weeks in a row. Next week, we'll be discussing whoever the hell someone buys.
We might have a podcast with a guest next week. We're working on something there, so that's something to look forward to.
That's a Carl show, that one. He's springing stuff on me on the second hour, eh? But we will see what that topic
you're
is.
You're clearly not reading WhatsApp, guy.
Am I?
We'll take it
off.
We'll
have a look. right. Anywho, thank you, everyone, for listening. Yeah, it's obviously a long one, but that's a lot of money. I think this might actually be longer than the Activision one, but it's Xbox only. I care about that. But hey-ho, thank you, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.